Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, it's Mehdi here. This month, we're taking a minute or so before each show to invite you to become a member of our podcast. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now is a time we all need to get behind journalists, media organizations that are trying to do their jobs, report the news, get to the truth. That's what we try and do on this show, week in, week out. And so I'm asking you all today to become a member and supporter of the Deconstructed community, to give whatever you can, $5, $10, $15, $20 a month or more. Head to theintercept.com/give. Theintercept.com/give. I mean, you're a fan of what we do, right? You're listening to the show right now. You've downloaded it. You never miss an episode of Deconstructed. And why would you? Remember when we interviewed Senator Chris Murphy just after the Senate voted to curtail the US role in the war in Yemen? Or when Dr. Cornel West officially endorsed Bernie Sanders' 2020 presidential bid right here on this show? Or our coverage of Iran, Israel, Islam and democracy? This stuff doesn't happen for free. You have to support good quality journalism with whatever you can afford. You may think it's a small donation, but when you donate, you're part of a broader, wider community that's helping to make independent journalism like ours stronger and healthier. So together, let's carry on making a difference. Theintercept.com/give. Thank you very much in advance. On to this week's show.
Nobody wants a compromise. I mean, that's the sad, tragic reality. The compromise kind of ground in politics on Brexit just has been torched, incinerated. It has ceased to exist. It's gone. And that, I think, is tragic.
Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm Mehdi Hassan. On today's show, you think only Americans have it bad right now? You think Donald Trump is just an American phenomenon? Think again.
What we're talking about with Trumpism is happening in this country. The scapegoating of migrants, rich, charlatan, snake oil salesmen, blaming anyone but those at the top of society for the problems they've caused. The echoes are pretty powerful.
That's my guest today, the British newspaper columnist and acclaimed author, Owen Jones. He went viral here in the US after he refused to join the rest of the British media in showing sympathy for British Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May, who cried as she finally resigned last Friday.
You can't just respond at a human level.
I have responded on a human level. I've spoken about the humanity of those who have suffered as a consequence of her policies, and I wish the news would give far more space to them rather than spending time discussing the Prime Minister crying because she can no longer hold the most powerful job in the country.
So, on today's show, Owen and I are going to talk Brexit madness, the shocking European Parliament election results, the end of Theresa May's premiership, and the rise and rise of the British Trumps, Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage. Basically, everything you need to know about the shit show on that side of the Atlantic, which, as you'll discover, isn't that different from the shit show on this side of it. You remember Brexit, right? The decision by 52% of British voters in the summer of 2016 to exit the European Union, Britain's biggest export market for goods, the world's biggest single market, the group of 28 countries that's helped to keep the peace on the continent of Europe since the Second World War, the club that Britain has been a member of for the past 46 years. Yeah, that Brexit, which came as a shock to the political, economic and media establishments in the UK, which wasn't supposed to happen, which was driven, in part, by angry white working class voters in the country's industrial heartlands. Sound familiar? Donald Trump, after all, was elected, as we've discussed on this show before, and as the bulk of the academic studies have demonstrated, not merely because of so-called economic anxiety on the part of white voters, but because of racial resentment, cultural insecurity, and a marked hostility to immigrants, to Muslims, to people of colour. And those are the same forces that drove Brexit. Listen to this voter in the former industrial town of Barnsley the day after the Brexit referendum.
It's all about immigration, right? It's not about trade or Europe or anything like that. It's all about immigration. It's to stop the Muslims from coming into this country. Simple as that.
And here's a factoid for you. According to one study, there's a close correlation between support for the death penalty, which was abolished in the UK, and support for Brexit. which sounds kind of weird and random, but it's actually not that weird or random. It's people harking back to an imagined, socially conservative, more orderly past. Make America and Britain great again. In so many ways, Brexit and Trump are two sides of the same coin. In fact, Trump has always been uber keen to associate himself with the pro-Brexit vote.
I think Brexit's going to end up being a great thing. People don't want to have other people coming in and destroying their country.
Look at Brexit. Look at Brexit. People want to take back control of their countries.
Call me Mr. Brexit.
And just as the Trump presidency has been the disaster that Trump's opponents warned it would be, in fact, more of a disaster than any of us could possibly have imagined, the same with Brexit in the UK. To cut a long story short, the Leave side, the Brexit side, spent the entire referendum campaign in 2016 telling us all that exiting the EU would be easy, a walk in the park, a simple negotiation. But guess what? It wasn't. Turns out leaving is much harder than they thought. And the UK has now been in a state of permanent political crisis and a bit of a global joke for the past 3 years. The Prime Minister, Theresa May, 3 times tried to get a Brexit deal through Parliament. 3 times she failed. Multiple ministers of hers quit in protest. Multiple multinational corporations and big banks have upped and left the UK because they want to keep their access to the EU single market. Britain is now close to a no-deal Brexit. A no-deal Brexit, where it just crashes out of the EU on October the 31st, with no deal, no negotiations, no safety net in place, and which every serious economist and analyst thinks would be an economic disaster for the UK. I'll be honest, sitting here in the US watching my home country fall apart in this way, walk towards the edge of the cliff in this way, engaging in this unprecedented act of political, social, and economic self-harm has been deeply depressing for me. Racism and xenophobia has been on the rise across the UK in recent years. The country is more divided, more polarised now than it was even in the summer of 2016.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
MPs, traitors! MPs, traitors!
Traitors. Again, sound familiar? Prime Minister May finally called it quits last Friday.
I do so with no ill will, but with enormous and enduring gratitude to have had the opportunity to serve the country I love.
But then came the political earthquake.
European parties are now jockeying for position after Sunday's elections to the EU Parliament tilted the balance of power in the bloc.
Far-right parties topped the polls in both France and in Italy.
Nigel Farage's Brexit Party claims an overwhelming victory.
On Sunday night, we got the results of the European Parliament elections. In France, the far-right National Rally Party of Marine Le Pen came first, ahead of President Macron's party. In Italy, the far-right Lega Party, led by the Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini, also came first. And guess who advises them both? A familiar name from Trump world. Yeah, Steve Bannon. In the UK, a brand new right-wing party called the Brexit Party, which was set up just a few months ago with the explicit intent of making Brexit happen, a no-deal Brexit even, came first in the European elections, winning as many votes as the mainstream Labour and Liberal Democratic parties combined. The founder of the Brexit Party is Nigel Farage, a former leader of the anti-immigration, anti-EU UK Independence Party, UKIP, a close ally of Donald Trump, the first British politician to get a meeting with Trump after he was elected president, and a man who has spent his entire adult life not just railing against immigrants and foreigners, but trying to get the UK out of Europe.
Let June the 23rd go down in our history as our Independence Day!
Guess who else is now campaigning basically for a no-deal Brexit? The man who is on course to be the next Conservative Prime Minister of the UK, former Foreign Secretary and former London Mayor Boris Johnson. He's been called the British Trump, a divisive, opportunistic, wannabe populist with dishevelled blonde hair and a long history of adultery, racism, and yes, serial dishonesty. Born in the US, he's talked about, quote, admiring Trump. And the US president, in turn, has declared Boris, as he's known, to be, quote, a friend of mine.
We in the United Kingdom will work hand in glove for the stability, the prosperity, and the security of the world with President Donald Trump.
Boris, like Farage, like Trump, thrives on chaos, on division, on disinformation. These people don't do detail. They don't do principle. They do chaos. And as I wrote for The Intercept last year, Trump and Brexit have chaos in common. It's not just a bug, it's a feature. Joining me now from London to talk about the rise of the British Trumps and Brexit and what it all means for the UK, for the US, for the world is my good friend, the Guardian columnist, best-selling author and proud British socialist, Owen Jones, who's been attending Brexit parties and rallies to find out what's really going on with these people. How Trumpian are they really? Owen, thanks for coming on Deconstructed.
What a pleasure. This is a huge honour, Mehdi. I miss you, Mehdi. You've been snatched cruelly from our British loving arms.
I miss you too, but I enjoy watching you on British television from afar, taking names. So on that note, first off, commiserations to you back home on Prime Minister Theresa May announcing her resignation. You seem to have taken that pretty hard. She meant a lot to you, didn't she?
Absolutely. I nearly started singing Elton John's Candle in the Wind to mourn her passing. Yeah, we were apparently it was supposed to be like a royal death, that we were supposed to somehow treat this as a terrible personal tragedy for which we must enter a profound period of collective mourning, which of course, you know, I very much, I think, threw myself into the spirit of, definitely kept to the script of this outpouring of emotion at this poor victim who happened to be the most powerful person in the country, enacting policies which have destroyed the lives of huge numbers of people who apparently we shouldn't be spending any time talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it's always a kind of, this is not the moment for it. Well, when is the moment for it? When a prime minister stands down, isn't that a moment to look at her or his legacy?
That's the thing. I mean, it's bad enough when they die. So when Margaret Thatcher died, which I always dreaded because Margaret Thatcher founded the kind of political consensus, which, you know, I would say is the root of the many ills that Britain is in turmoil, and it goes back to her policies, market, fundamentalism, that kind of stuff. Yep. But when she died, and I dreaded it because I thought it would end up being like the death of Princess Diana meets a month-long conservative political broadcast, which is basically what it was. Yep. And it was this sense of if you talk about, you know, when she died, the actual record, it was seen as a kind of outrageous disgrace. You're politicising her death.
Yeah. Same happened here when John McCain and George Bush Sr. died. I did a show with Glenn Greenwald on Deconstructed, where we talked about George Bush Sr.'s legacy, where no one wanted to talk about all the shit he did. And the same applies now when Theresa May cries and says, I tried really hard, but she had a horrible three-year record. This is not even George Bush Sr. from 20, 30 years ago. This is like now.
But that's what's even more perverse.
We've seen the Brexit car crash in front of our eyes.
Exactly. So it's not even, you know, that somebody has died. I mean, even then we should be talking about the political record, not whitewashing their record and allowing their supporters to use their death to kind of define their legacy. But we're talking quite literally about somebody losing their job, the most powerful position in the country, because they were very, 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 very bad at it.
I mean, very bad at it. She's probably the worst prime minister in living memory. So good riddance now, I think it's fair to say, to Theresa May. Who will replace May as Prime Minister? Will it be the British Trump, as he's been described by some, the former Foreign Secretary, former London Mayor, old Etonian Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson?
Tragically, I do believe that our own pound shop Trump is about to take over. I mean, I don't know how to describe him for an American audience. I really don't. I mean, when he was made foreign, I mean, one of the worst things, Theresa May did a lot of terrible things. She drove children into poverty at the fastest rate since 1988. She stripped, basically drove Windrush Britons. These were black Britons who arrived in Britain decades ago. She drove them out of their home, stripped them of medical care, deported them from the country. I mean, we could go on. It was terrible. But one of the worst things she did was make Boris Johnson Foreign Secretary. That was bad enough. You know, he is a joke without a punchline. He once described black people as pickaninnies with watermelon smiles. He once said that if we're going to have equal marriage, why not have two men marrying a goat? He talked about Muslim women as as letterboxes and bank robbers, which led to a surge in hate crimes against Muslim women, including people shoving envelopes through their veils. I mean, he is somebody who is a charlatan. He was sacked by a newspaper, the Times, for lying.
For making up quotes, That sounds familiar.
He made up quotes.
A leader who just makes up quotes. Never heard that before.
Just made them up. Woof. And then he was sacked by the Conservative leader over a decade ago for lying about an affair he'd had.
And he continues to fail upwards.
Exactly. And now
he's going to get the top job he's dreamt about since he was a kid.
Oh, it's just a nightmare, which you think... We've reached our lowest ebb, and yet there's still some depth.
You think after Cameron May, but no, the Conservatives give us Boris. Is he a British Trump? Because clearly he's not as dumb as Trump.
Well, I don't... Do you know what? I don't know about that. I mean, I suppose Trump is on his own... I mean, you could say, I mean, look, I mean, you know, Trump didn't win the popular vote, but he was seen as a candidate who could never possibly win a presidential election, and really did. I mean, I think the thing with Boris Johnson is, I mean, he's very similar in a way, in that he's a charlatan for whom normal rules don't apply. So for any normal politician, yeah. Just one scandal. I mean, once he was, you know, there's a recording of a phone conversation where he talked with a friend discussing beating up a journalist. Any other politician, you know, we had a leader of the Labour Party, Ed Miliband, who you wrote a biography about,
yes.
who basically his political career was basically partly destroyed because he ate a bacon sandwich weirdly once.
Yeah.
I know your listeners yes. are probably thinking, come on, he's exaggerating.
No, there's pictures of it all over the internet.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It genuinely had a massive impact in destroying
him. Boris Johnson can be caught on tape saying, he'll help someone beat up a guy, an innocent person. And that doesn't damage his career. In fact, he's on course to be prime minister.
Exactly. Sacked twice for lying. I mean, it's just Trump.
So the similarities are there, definitely. And I think the British Trump appellation applies. What about another British Trump? What about Nigel Farage? Were you surprised to see him lead the Brexit Party to victory on Sunday when the European election results came out?
No, and I wasn't at all. I mean, Farage is just pure, unadulterated poison. And in terms of, obviously, you know, there are many architects. I mean, it really has been a team effort plunging Britain into its current calamity. And it is a time of unprecedented turmoil since World War II Britain at the moment. And what Farage did, you know, he's somebody who has injected into the political mainstream a very vicious, nasty, anti-migrant politics. UKIP was this party, what was a tiny party, but it started climbing in the polls. And what David Cameron, the Prime Minister, did, because there was a kind of double-pronged attack by kind of unhinged right-wing Tory Brexiteers on the back benches and Farage. So he said, well, you know, because he feared if he didn't, he wouldn't win a majority in the election in 2015. He didn't win the majority in 2010, so he had to go into the coalition with the Lib Dems, Liberal Democrats. And he thought he just threw this red meat, which he thought would satisfy his Tory Brexiteers, but it just made them hungrier and fatter. And what it did with Farage is this idea. He thought Cameron, he was a genius, he'd pop the UKIP bubble, that would be the end of Farage. But instead, you know, the more both Labour and the Tories spoke about clamping down on immigration, it just drove it up as an issue, made people more likely to support UKIP and Nigel Farage. And then it ended up, of course, with a referendum, which was called basically to satisfy the Tory Brexiteer backers.
And you have Conservative voters last week defecting in their hundreds of thousands to this Brexit party because they want the real deal, not the light version, in the same way that Republicans kind of indulged a right-wing base with crazy conspiracy theories and anti-immigrant sentiment. And then they were shocked when Donald Trump came along and beat all their establishment leaders.
I mean, during the referendum campaign, the idea... So, you know, now what's being portrayed by Nigel Farage and other Brexiteers, the only real deal Brexit, the only proper Brexit, is a no-deal Brexit. We leave the EU without negotiating any deal with them, which is stupid because it would be disastrous for the economy. But now Farage has made that. He's helped make it an alliance with the Tory right. The only real Brexit. Everything else is a sellout. Everything else is a capitulation, a surrender.
Treason. You hear the same, you know, same rhetoric. Treason. Enemies of the people. Saboteurs.
Crush the saboteurs. I mean, these are all the rhetoric, you know, which is the likes of Theresa. I mean, you know, infamously, he was the front page of the Daily Mail that said enemies of the people, which was about these judges who said there needed to be scrutiny about parliamentary scrutiny leaving the EU. Who wrote that ended up Theresa May's press spokesperson.
So let me ask you this. Was this imported from the US? Because Farage has hinted in recent interviews that it was, or was Britain always like this?
I mean, there's a bit of both. I mean, I think there's a positive feedback loop going on there, to be honest. What's odd is, I think it's worth emphasising, Trump is really, 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 really unpopular in this country. Millions of people who voted Leave have contempt for Donald Trump. It's not like the 52% of people who voted Leave are all Trumpians. It's just not the case at all. But there is obviously a big chunk of people who've been screwed over, the economy's rigged against them, they're angry, they're upset, the industry vanished in the 80s onwards because of Thatcher and everything else. And the danger is if there isn't a radical alternative to that, then the likes of Farage and Trump in some cases fill that vacuum.
Who are both con artists not offering these people who are screwed over any kind of solutions. I mean, Farage, like Trump, former finance guy, he was in banking, now pretends to be a tribune of the working class, the white working class, that is. Trump calls himself the blue-collar billionaire, and people fall for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember, you know, in America, in New York, on the day of the inauguration, and someone described Trump as a self-made billionaire. I said, hang on, his dad was a millionaire. And he went, yeah, his dad was a millionaire. He's now a billionaire. He's a self-made billionaire. I just thought, how do I even engage with this? But it's exactly it. Farage is a privately educated Tory boy who quit the Tories because Thatcher was no longer leader. His party is bankrolled by millionaires. His new Brexit party in their constitution is committed. I mean, no one knows this because they don't yell about it, but it's committed to, you know, mass privatisation, tax cuts for the rich, and so on, which a former ally of his, a former MEP for UKIP, has actually just condemned him for. So you've got this, it's this perverse kind of, we're going to get, we'll blame the migrant, blame the refugee, blame the Muslim for all the injustices caused by the very people who actually bankroll people like myself.
So the question, Owen, what is the future for Brexit? Britain was supposed to leave the EU on March 29th. It's now been delayed to October 31st. Is it ever going to happen? Is there going to be a second referendum? Is there going to be a general election? People say if you stop it, there'll be riots. You know, this is implicit. If you don't do Brexit, people are going to riot and say, you betrayed us, you know, it's you're going against the will of the people, all this stuff. Even though, and I've personally never liked referendums to begin with. I think they're un-British. I think they used, you know, Clement Attlee, the former British Prime Minister, once said, they're the device of dictators and demagogues. You can't decide complicated issues in this simplistic binary way. But there you go. They did a referendum in 2016. If Brexit doesn't happen, is that going to lead to kind of riots, violence, what?
Well, I'm loath to go down that route because, you know, I mean, we already have the far right obviously on the rise. And the tradition, as you know, the traditional far right trope is always the stab in the back myth. Basically, a grand national project, normally war, has been subverted by internal traitors and a lack of grit and determination. And obviously that's what they're feeding on. And they're already feeding on that now. But we should never judge in politics. What should we, if we can't provoke the far right, basically, so we won't do, we'll let them get their own way.
And no, I agree.
The vast majority of people who voted Brexit, I should emphasize, are not
far right. It's like the Trump
right
base. But hold on, it's like the debate in the US right now. We can't impeach Trump, say the Democrats, because it will inflame his base. And A, you shouldn't make decisions based on other people's bases. But also, they're inflamed anyway.
Exactly.
The far right need an excuse to get worked up.
Exactly. I mean, do you know what? I mean, the problem is there's no easy answer here, because if I never live through another referendum again, I would be a very, very happy man. They are dreadful. It's
do you think Brexit's going to happen?
I genuinely am not sure anymore. I'm genuinely not sure. I think now what might happen is the next Tory leader has to be elected by what remains of the Tory membership, which has collapsed basically to a bunch of racist grannies. I don't want to be, I'm not being ageist there, because most grannies are lovely and not racist, but they are a very small membership. And the next Tory leader to win them over has to be the most extreme possible on Brexit. And that means no deal Brexit. But Parliament, there's no majority in Parliament for no deal. So the only way of getting around that is to have another referendum with no deal on the ballot paper, or to call an election. Now, if we had no deal, it'd be obviously a terrible...
If you call an election, you want Jeremy Corbyn to be Prime Minister, right? The Labour leader, who is a socialist like yourself, but you voted Remain. He says he voted Remain, but it's very clear his heart was never in it. He's never been a supporter of the EU. He's a lifelong Eurosceptic. A lot of people say he's partly to blame for the mess we're in because he didn't take a stronger stance in favour of staying in the European Union.
I completely disagree with that. I think, you know, he was a...
You think he campaigned to the utmost of his ability in 2016... And since then, he's taken a strong enough stance.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a left Eurosceptic. So am I. I mean, I'm a Eurosceptic who campaigned for Remain. And anyone who thinks, you know, that most people who voted Remain are the sort of people who kind of, you know, will put face paint of the EU flag on their face and go around singing the EU national anthem, Ode to Joy. That's just not where most people are at. And I think what Labour did in that referendum was to try and link or connect or tap into where lots of people are. Look, we all have reservations about the EU, but it's better we stay in it. The problem with the referendum campaign was it was framed as an internal Tory...
Do you think he actually believes that it's better to stay in? Or is he okay with Brexit? Like, a lot of people are not okay with Brexit. I know you said red lines. Forget the red lines. I'm not okay with Brexit. I'd be deeply depressed if and when the UK leaves the EU for multiple political, economic, social, cultural reasons. I don't think Jeremy Corbyn would.
I just don't think it's a red line for him in a way it is for lots of other people. I think, I mean, he did campaign for Remain.
Even given the far-right fallout, we've seen post-Brexit a rise in hate crimes, xenophobia, far-right groups recruiting.
But I think the dilemma Labour had was, I mean, look, the left was always accused of being too pure, as in, you know, we'd put principle ahead of power. And then Labour were trying to come up with a majority of, look, we lost the referendum, but let's try and come up with a compromise that brings the country together. And let's try, you know, the only way we'll win an election is by people who voted both ways. That was their strategy. The problem is that strategy's collapsed because nobody wants a compromise. I mean, that's the sad, tragic reality. The compromise kind of ground in politics on Brexit just has been torched, incinerated. It is a smoky, it has ceased to exist. It's gone. And that, I think, is tragic. So I think now Labour have no option, and I think this is what they're going to do, but to pivot into supporting another referendum. That's fraught with problems, Mehdi. There's not a majority in Parliament for one. It doesn't matter. You know, Labour have already
and
told
And we don't know what
MPs
the result of a campaign would be.
I think we'd lose. I think there's a very big chance we'd lose again, and that would be catastrophic.
I wouldn't be surprised. It could go either way. It's again, as with Trump, there's a very good chance he could be re-elected next year, despite all the unpopularity. Let me ask you this before we wrap up. Why should Americans or anyone else in the world give a damn about what's happening in good old Blighty, in good old Great Britain? I mean, I think we can all agree the sun long ago set on the British Empire. So why is it such a massive story? Why does it matter so much?
I mean, we've got to join the dots. You know, Trump is coming to, you know, Britain on a state visit. I'm helping to organise the mass protest against it. And what we're arguing is, look, what we're talking about with Trumpism is happening in this country. The scapegoating of migrants, rich charlatan, snake oil salesmen, blaming anyone but those at the top of society for the problems they've caused. So obviously the same things are happening. They're not in the exact same way, but the echoes are pretty powerful. And I think, you know, in both America and Britain, though, I think there was actually hope. And I think, you know, if you look at the Sanders and AOC movements and the rise of the British left, they've both learned quite quite a lot from each other, I think, and are learning a lot from each other. And I actually think, despite the absolute mess, let's just be brutally honest, both of our countries are currently in, we're spinning around in turmoil at the moment, partly because of this right-wing, toxic, blame migrants for all the problems in society. And the irony is, of course, migrant scapegoating has caused far more turmoil than migrants ever have. That's why partly we're both in both countries in the mess they're in. But actually, there is hope in both countries. And I think now, given, I think, in the Western world, there's a massive struggle going on between a politics like Trump's, like, you know, Farage, like the National Front in France, like even Spain now, Vox. But there is another, which is the, you know, as I say, the Corbyn, Sanders, AOC in Spain, the left have just suffered setbacks, unfortunately, but there is left there. And I think we need to link our struggles together and learn from each other. Because if another crash happens, we shouldn't write that out in the coming years, we're overdue one. The danger is they are ready and waiting. They've got a story. They've got a narrative. And they are becoming international. Steve Bannon is going around trying to stitch together an international far-right movement, including with Farage. And indeed, he's spoken to Boris Johnson and other front runners for the Tory leadership. So because they've got an international, they're linking together. We've got to do the same thing as well. We've got to link up our struggles. We've got to link up our movements. Because, you know, the danger is there is, you know, the rise of the far right is a threat to migrants and minorities and a threat to our democracies. And we need to take that seriously. We need a common, united, international front to defeat it.
I totally agree with all of that.
Yeah.
One last question. You're one of the organisers of the big anti-Trump rally next week. Donald Trump is visiting the UK for a three-day state visit. What is your message to Donald Trump? Because last time he came and there were protests, he claimed later to Piers Morgan that there were many, many protests in my favour.
Yeah, I think there was about 150. Yeah, I mean, just absolute far-right weirdos who he turned up. You know, the kind of incel type people who leave weird comments online below YouTube posts. But no, we had about 250,000 people. And bear in mind, it was a weekday, so people took time off work. One of the biggest weekday demonstrations we've had in this country. You know, this time, our message is going to be again, and it's not just about him. I hate this whole, he's this just big, vulgar, crass individual. You know, we're going to say, we're not just marching against you, we're marching against what you stand for, what you represent, misogyny, transphobia, Islamophobia, and all the time where you shift wealth and power in the pockets of you and your friends. And that politics is here in this country as well. So it's not just about Trump. We are telling him to do one. And last time round, he avoided London because he was so scared about the protests. But we're not just making it about him. We're saying everyone who stands for this, Trump, Salvini, Farage, we're out to fight you. And we're gonna kick your butts politically in the years to come.
I hope you do. Owen, good luck with Trump next week and good luck with Brexit for the rest of your life.
Thank you, amigo, because we will be talking about it forever. Thank you.
Cheers. That was my friend, the journalist, commentator, columnist, author Owen Jones in the UK. Every time you think US politics has won the award for craziest politics in the world, the Brits come along and say, hold my drink. It has been absolute madness there in recent years. It's only getting madder, which is why we decided to devote today's show to Britain and Brexit and the British Trumps. And here's what's really depressing. In the US, you can get rid of Donald Trump next November. Worst case scenario, he wins again. You can get rid of him 4 years after that. Brexit, if it happens, Brexit's forever. That's our show. Deconstructed is a production of First Look Media and The Intercept. Our producer is Zach Young. The show was mixed by Rick Kwan. Lital Molad is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by Bart Warshaw. Betsy Reed is The Intercept's editor-in-chief. And I'm Mehdi Hassan. You can follow me on Twitter at Mehdi R. Hassan. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to the show so you can hear it every week. Go to theintercept.com/deconstructed to subscribe from your podcast platform of choice, iPhone, Android, whatever. If you're subscribed already, please do leave us a rating or review. It helps people find the show. And if you want to give us feedback, email us at podcasts@theintercept.com. Thanks so much. See you next week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.